And so we sit down, and now that I'm certified case officer, I know what he was doing to me. I didn't know then. It's blatant now. He's putting me at ease. He's just warming up his knife.
Now, being a spy is not easy. You live in the shadows, operate in obscurity, and deceive for a living.
For decades, the secret world of espionage has captivated audiences. But reality may be a far cry from the movies. The CIA revealing what it's really like to operate in the shadows.
Welcome to Heroes Behind Headlines. I'm your host, Ralph Pizzullo. Our guest once again is former CIA case officer Doug Lau. Doug served 8 years in the CIA, most of that in war zones in the Middle East and Afghanistan. After he resigned from the CIA in 2013, Doug and I co-authored a New York Times bestselling book about his career in the CIA called Left of Boom. He later served as executive producer, creator, and star of the Discovery series Finding Escobar's Millions. He also appeared in the Bravo Channel series Spy Games. Back on September 11, 2001, Doug was a freshman at Indiana University, planning on becoming an optometrist when the World Trade Center and Pentagon were attacked. He says that that day changed his life and motivated him to join the CIA. Today, he's going to talk about how he applied for the CIA during his senior year in college and the long process he went through before he was accepted and what he had to go through before being admitted to the farm or Camp Perry, the CIA's ultra-secret training facility where recruits are taught the skills required to become clandestine officers. It's my great privilege to welcome my friend Doug Lau back to the podcast. He's today's hero behind the headlines.
Yeah, for me, CIA first came on my radar. And again, people just, they find this too surreal, I guess. I was walking through one of the hallways of some campus building. And you remember, to date myself, when we used to have things called bulletin boards that were actually physical. And so somebody had tacked up just an 8x10 printed off piece of paper. It wasn't even slick. It wasn't like well done like the CIA had. I think the CIA probably just sent an email to IU and said, hey, can you type something up that we're coming on? So it was just, have you considered a career in the CIA? And bold black letters. Come to an information session, this date, this building, this time. That's it. And that's all it was. And so I was like, this has to be a joke because anybody could have printed that off.
Right.
There's no emblem. There's no seal. There's nothing.
No secret password.
Yeah. And this is also before, I sound like Grandpa Doug. this is before camera phones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I had a flip phone, a Nokia that had Tetris on it. That was the extent of how awesome it was. No camera. So I had to write down, like hand write down on a notepad, this date and time. And then I forgot about it. And it was probably 2 weeks out. And I was in the library, I remember. And I was going through that notebook. And I saw that I had scribbled that down.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, crap, that's today. That's in like 45 minutes. You know, look at my watch. I'm going to go to that. I've never met a CIA person before. This could be interesting. So I just walked over and believe it or not, at the like recruitment center or whatever the heck they called it is where JP Morgan Chase is going to come and give you their, and you know, Lockheed Martin's going to give you their presentation. So I went in there and normally, and I was a senior, so I was trying to get a job. Normally there'd be about 10 kids per information session
because
you really had to be interested in that company. It was packed. There were like 50 kids in there.
Wow.
standing room only in the back.
Guys and
oh girls. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. And there were faculty there too who really wanted to like, and I had never seen faculty, but there were, it was a packed house.
Wow.
And in the front is just some like 55-year-old dude, kind of, you know, out of shape, you know, in a suit off the rack, way too big for him. And he had an assistant, a woman. I don't know what she was there for. She didn't speak and she didn't, there was nothing to set up because, you know, there's no PowerPoint or anything back then. So he begins the presentation and he's just, you know, whatever his fake name he was using was, you know, I'm John. And, you know, this is about the CIA. This is who we are. This is what we do. And he really only got about 10 minutes in, and these jerks who were standing next to me in the back started catcalling him. And they were catcalling him about drones and Guantanamo.
Okay.
Which were big, still kind of big issue, of course.
You know?
But it was red hot back then.
Yeah.
And this
is
a very liberal campus. Yeah. So they were.
This is Indiana University.
Indiana University. And so they wouldn't let him get in a word edgewise.
Wow.
And so, you know, he's just kind of throwing his hands up in the air.
Yeah, like,
okay, F this. Like, I'm not going to try to outshout you. But what happened was the crowd actually turned in this guy's favor, the CIA guy's favor, and started turning around, telling these guys in the back, shut the hell up.
Like, we want to hear what
we
want
to hear what he has to say.
Yeah.
And I, too, was like, dude, shut up. Like, yeah, freedom of speech, but also the freedom to listen. And you're trampling on that for me. Like, I want to hear what this man has to say. I may not agree with the word, but I want to know his perspective because I don't get to meet CIA people all day. And so these guys got shouted down by like some football players, you know, like, so they knew like, shut the hell up. So the guy got to finish his speech and then he did a little bit of Q&A, but even people who were not shouting at him were asking like vindictive question, like gotcha questions.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That he couldn't get out of, like starting it with, so when you torture people, which you do, so then he's like, oh, okay, you know. So he couldn't win, and I felt bad for him. But he said at the end, so if you like what you heard today, go to CIA.gov and apply online. And every other company I had been to, they'll hand you their business card. You know, they'll hand you a slick.
Brochure.
They'll tell you their website and all of the brochures, And he was just like, go to our website, apply online. And okay. And I forgot about it. And then several months went by. I was sitting in my apartment and I only go into this much detail to give you an idea of what a caprice this was. This is not premeditated. And I was sitting with my roommate and something about CIA came up. I don't know. And I said, I went to this guy's information session. And I was like, oh, you know what? They have a website. And again, dating myself, my roommate is like, there's no way the CIA has a website.
Yeah.
back, this is 2004. Facebook was just invented that year. So like.
Yeah, it was the beginning.
You didn't use the internet. Like we didn't, you go into ESPN.com maybe. Yeah.
Check the scores.
Your email.
Right.
Like internet. And so, so I'm like, let's look. So we went to CIA and they had a website and he was like, this is crazy, man. We're going to get arrested. You know, like we were scared.
They're
like
tracking
oh
us.
My God.
Yeah.
And I said, dude, I'm applying. I'm going to, and he's like, oh, you're going to go to jail. And so, but that was our mindset back then. It's totally different now. And so I applied and they had the job descriptions on there. And I was like, oh my God. So I applied for a couple positions and then I applied for FBI because my buddy, my roommate's just drinking beers with me and we're laughing like, I hope a black car pulls up, you know, and then I applied to NSA and all of the alphabet soup organizations and, you know, it was like, whatever, come at me, bro.
Yeah.
I'm a dumb 22-year-old, but 48 hours later they did. And, I got a phone call at 8 a.m. from a woman and it woke me up. And again, I only go into context because if your listeners are considerably younger than me, this won't make sense to them otherwise. Back then, if somebody called your phone, you answered 100% of the time. And that meant that they had your cell phone number, because we had a house line too. So right. If my cell phone's ringing, you know me. And there was no text messaging, because one text message cost 25 cents. So to like say, hello, how are you? Let's go. It's a dollar, you know? Right. So like Now it's unlimited. And I counted one day, it's like I send 800 text messages a day, and so does everyone else. So anyway, but my phone rang, I answered, and I forget the fake company name that they use, but it was like, hi, this is Jennifer with Hansen and Hansen Company. You applied for a job with the federal government. And I was like, yeah, I applied for a lot of jobs. And she was like, yeah, but this was about like 2 days ago on Tuesday at like 9:30 p.m. And I was like, so?
Yeah.
You know, like then I was trying, I was like, so? And it's 8 a.m. And she's like, yeah, do you remember? I said, yeah, I applied for like 8 federal organizations. And she's like, okay, well, we're the one that's located in McLean, Virginia. And I go, big deal.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't care.
Yeah, what's that?
And I didn't even know, like, because of Hollywood, CIA is in Langley, which, by the way, doesn't exist. That's a slang term. It's McLean, Virginia. You can look it up. And so I'm like, I don't know what McLean, Virginia means, lady. You know, like totally being pejorative. And she's like, oh, boy. You know, she's
just like, we got one. Yeah.
So you applied for a job called a case officer, and then it clicked, because I didn't know what a case officer was until I went to their website and it explained it to me. This is a spy. So I was like, is this the CIA? And she's like, oh, man.
You're not supposed to say that.
Yeah. And she's like, yeah, but we're with Harris and Harris or whatever. And I was like, on behalf of the CIA. And she's like, oh, Jesus. Okay. So then she's just like, listen, you're totally unprepared for this phone call. I'm going to call you exactly tomorrow at 8 a.m. again. Okay. Please be prepared to talk to me cogently. And I was like, is it a job interview? She's like, just 8 a.m. Be ready. I will be calling.
As Doug says, joining the CIA is not how it's depicted in the movies. For him, there was nothing James Bond or cloak and dagger about it. Attending a job seminar his senior year of college and filling out an application online. Or the numerous interviews he was subjected to in an anonymous-looking conference room. According to the CIA website, there are four main areas which are assessed: an applicant's qualifications, the applicant's recent adult lifestyle, the breadth of an applicant's background, and the applicant's ability to meet and hold security and medical clearances. The traits they look for are honesty, ethical behavior, consistency, dependability, patriotism, and a drive to provide service to others. Doug had all of them.
So then, of course, I went and told all my friends that night, which you know, oh man, like number one thing I should not have done. And I told all my friends, like, oh, CIA called me, man, and they're going to call at 8 a.m. tomorrow. I'm so hot. Yeah. So I told like 200 people that night. And then the next day, 8 a.m. on the nose, she calls. And I was awake and ready. And it was very, and when I say superficial, I mean that to mean it's just on the surface. We're not deep diving. And she was asking me very basic questions and just wanted to know why I applied in the first place. And I know a lot of people who have gotten that phone call and it stopped there. And the reason I think that I got past that is because I didn't prepare. And when she asked me questions, I gave her an authentic response. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the people, and a lot of them got through, and I worked with them, who would like went to Princeton or something, would have said, Well, I think I'm a good fit for the CIA because I speak 8 esoteric languages, and I have 4 majors, and I got a 1600 on the SAT. Furthermore, they're used to that. They're used to the hyper smart. Whereas, you know, I don't remember what I said, but I'm sure it was something like, oh, my dad was in Vietnam and I want to get it on.
Yeah.
And so, like, if I can get it on with you guys, I'll do it. Otherwise, I'd probably join the Marines. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you guys seem cool and I'm dedicated and I love this country and I'll fight for you. You know, probably something like that.
Right. So, just basic.
Yeah. And so she had to be like, well, this is interesting. And she had my credentials. She could see on paper I'm smart. She could see what courses I took and that I spoke Japanese. And so then we hung up and then I never really heard anything again. After that for, God, I don't know. So quite a while. And,
like months.
Oh yeah. Months.
Yeah.
And so then I took a job with a shipping company called DHL and I had kind of just forgotten about the agency. And, it was a whim, like a bug got up my butt, you know, right, and I was just like, you know what? Those guys never even got back to me, you know? And so I had a phone number that I think she had given me if I had any questions, and I called, and this would have been 6 months later or so. And they answered, and there was another woman, and she said, well, where are you located now? Are you still in Indiana? I said, no, I live in Boulder, Colorado now. She's like, okay, well, we need your new address. You got to keep that updated in our system. And if you are ever like taken out of the system and you're no longer in the running, you will get a letter from us.
Oh, wow.
I promise you that. Like, you will hear from us. So I gave her my address. And then she said, well, you need to actually meet with somebody in person. Okay, yeah, I'd love to. And so she's like, all right, well, there'll be somebody in Denver. And it was like 2 months out or something like that. And she's like, so it's going to be this date at this time. You will be there. You know, okay, I mean, yeah, I guess.
Okay. Like,
I'll just drop everything and I'll be there. And so I said, yeah, all right. So I put that on my calendar. And then sure enough, 2 months went by and I drive to this like random office park in Denver, you know, and go in and find, you know, the correct room. And there's a secretary and I'm like, this is effing weird.
You know?
Because you're thinking CIA, what you see in Jason Bourne, all those glitzy computers and like you can touch screen everything. And, you know, they got, you know, Saudi Arabia's on this screen and Iran's on this screen and China's on this screen. And they're, no, it's just your average everyday lobby. And the secretary took my name, have a seat. So then I'm just waiting and I'm seeing people come in and out of this door. And I'm like, these can't be CIA people. These are dudes in their 40s and 50s wearing like polo shirts and khakis. There's just no way. Do they know that the CIA is here right now?
Yeah.
I bet they don't know. There was some other company. Nope. And so somebody calls me in and they take me to this office and there's like a 75-year-old guy sitting at a desk. And so that too, I'm like, what? Like, he had white hair. And I'm like, okay, what is going on? This guy cannot still be employed by the CIA. What have I got? Where am I? Am I getting punked? Like, what is this? And he's like, yo, have a seat. And so we sit down. And now that I'm certified case officer, I know what he was doing to me. I didn't know then. It's blatant now. He's putting me at ease. He's just warming up his knife.
Right.
And he's just like, oh, hey, how are you? Thanks for coming. Yeah, so you live in Boulder. I've been to Boulder before. Have you ever been to the Flatiron Mountains? Interesting place.
Yeah.
What's your favorite restaurant?
Yeah.
And like, I'm like this dude, what is this? And I'm just answering his questions like, okay, like, why does this guy want to talk about sushi for, you know, this is weird. And so we're just sitting there, and then he has nothing in front of him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have my resume. Mm-hmm. He's not writing anything down.
Wow.
And he's not typing on a computer. He's just looking at me, engaging me, because he's a pro. And so he's like, so, and he already knows the answer to his question. So he's like, so you, as I understand it, know a little bit about East Asia. That was my degree in college. And so I'm like, yeah, I mean, you know, I got a, got a degree in it, you know, thinking I'm the smartest guy in the room when it comes to China, Japan, and South Korea. And so he's like, really interesting. Huh. And then the knife comes out and he puts it in my ribs and he says, Nihongo nasimasu yo, demo hisashiburi, which in Japanese means, I also speak Japanese. It's just been a while. But he said it fluently like a newscaster. And I, as soon as he did, I was like, oh, he speaks like my professor. Oh, no. Oh, no. Like, and then right then and there, it started to turn.
Yeah.
That was the turn. And you could see it in his eyes and you could see, like, he knew I got you. Like, and I've done it to so many people overseas when so I know what that feeling is. You see it in movies sometimes where the killer would be like, actually, I'm the killer.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, oh, because they didn't know, like the big reveal. And so then I'm like, oh, so did you study Japanese? Yeah, I lived there for 4 years. You did. Oh, I went to Tokyo for 10 days. I see. You know, and then he's like, but I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about Pakistan. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. Because I had filled out a form and it said, list three countries with which you have some expertise. Now, I could have put Japan, China, South Korea, and North Korea, the Koreas. That's East Asia. That's what I have a degree in. But I thought, no, I'm going to show some range. So I stripped Korea off and I wrote Pakistan because I just thought, whatever. Oh, he didn't want to hear a word about Japan. He didn't want to hear a word about China.
What do you know about Pakistan?
Which I had degrees in it. I could have talked all day about both. And he wants to talk about Pakistan. He just started asking me all these questions about their nuclear capabilities. I didn't know anything. And I was like, no, but I could see how that could be an issue. Yes, correct. You know, but he had me, you know, and like I said, I ended up doing it later in my life to others. So I always remembered, oh yeah, I know what it feels like to be on the other end of this. But he had me. And then I walked out of there thinking I just made a fool of myself. That guy just ate me alive, man. In such a cordial and calm way too. Cause at the end he's like, you know, Douglas, it has been a real pleasure speaking with you. So happy to have met you. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. Like, I should have wore a diaper to this, you know? So, but I left thinking that's it. It's over with that. And then I still had that number. Didn't hear anything. But I still didn't receive that rejection letter that they promised me. So another 3-4 months went by. I heard nothing. So I called again. And I hate having to always preface and say how much I love the CIA. So when I do say things that aren't always in the best light, I'm just telling you what happened. Someone answered and she says, oh yeah, you have a polygraph scheduled next week.
Whoa.
I was like, wait, what? You know? And so she's like, yeah, I have you down here for a polygraph. I'm like, so is that at the same place in Denver? No, that's in Virginia. And I was like, oh, so I have to come to Virginia. Yep. And I was like, all right, because I had a month of sales calls scheduled. Yeah. So now how am I going to get out of that? And I asked, and they're like, well, that's kind of the job. Think extemporaneously. Do you want to do this or not? That's what you'll be doing for your life. So yeah, I told my boss that I think I said my grandmother was sick because that was the only way I was going to get out of it. And I had to go home just for 3 or 4 days. And instead I flew to DC, had my first ever polygraph. That was interesting. Which, by the way, just as a side note for your listeners, if you've ever had a polygraph, then you should know this. They're undefeatable. They are. Yeah. And if you think you're going because you've seen a movie about being able to cheat one, you can't. Okay. Mm. I've had probably 15 polygraphs over my career. It's so good. It's to the point where if I say something to the effect of, yeah, me and Tim went to McDonald's, the polygrapher is going to be looking at the bars, just bars, like audio bars, and go, was there someone else in that car? Just from looking at bars. Wow. And then me go, oh yeah, Rick was in the car too. Yeah, I thought so. Okay, yep, that makes sense.
Oh, wow.
Just from looking at bars bouncing up and down.
Wow, that precise.
Because it's showing I'm lying by omission. And then as soon as I say, oh yeah, Rick was in the car too, and then it flatlines, they're like, okay, that's what I needed. But yeah, you're not going to beat a polygraph ever. Don't even try. So anyway, that's just a little side note on polygraphs if you want to get in.
That's interesting.
But yeah, so got through the polygraphs. There's a whole barrage of tests of intelligence. Surprise. It's in the name. You got to be smart. So you take a lot of IQ tests, meet with a lot of psychiatrists. They want to make sure you're sound mind. And that goes on for a few days. So you got to budget in a few days. And then they released me and I still had like 2 or 3 days left. I had actually never been inside the district before.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and stayed in DC for a while for 2 more days. Just kind of checked it out, see where I wanted to live. And then, I was in Boulder, Colorado, and my brother was actually visiting me. And I went and checked my mail on a Sunday morning right before he left. And I had a FedEx envelope, and I opened it, and it was an offer letter, not a rejection letter.
Wow.
Yeah, just like that. I mean, there was no talk in between, no emails saying you're still in the running.
Right.
No portal I could log on to. And I just got one sheet of paper in an FedEx envelope. And it's like, congratulations. Whatever that lady's fake company was, Smith and Hansen or whatever, is offering you a job in McLean, Virginia. Bold. You're like, do you get it this time, dum-dum?
2 years after initially filling out a CIA application online, after countless interviews, tests, and a rigorous security clearance process, which Doug will discuss in a moment, he received an offer letter to join the CIA. The only other thing he was told was to show up on a specific Monday morning at CIA headquarters. Doug's brother was the only person who knew he was accepting a job with the CIA. When Doug asked what he was supposed to tell his current employer, he was told to figure it out. Seemingly without warning and with very little instruction or idea of what was to come, Doug had to uproot his life, leave his job, say goodbye to family and friends, find a new place to live, and show up to his new mysterious job at the CIA.
This would be my first day. I went through the gate and checked in and then parked, which it's like a Costco parking lot. It's massive. That place is huge. And then came in through the front entrance, which is what they tell you to do, where the stars are on the wall. It's the lobby. And so I checked in through there and I thought I was supposed to meet somebody there and no one was there. And I was 30 minutes early. So I started walking around. It's a big building. And they have this huge cafeteria. And so I was kind of walking. I was like, oh my God, they have a Dunkin' Donuts and a Starbucks?
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. And a Panda Express? This is okay. Did not expect that. So just walking around and I don't know. And everyone's hustling and bustling because they're going to get to their offices upstairs.
Right.
They're all upstairs. I don't know what to do. So I just kept doing laps. And then eventually I just kind of stood by the stars. until, you know, I was probably supposed to start at 8. So it's probably like 8:20. And a woman comes in. She's like, "Hi, are you Doug?" I'm like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Where have you been?" I was like, "Here," like pointing at my shoes, like, "I'm here." And she's like, "Yeah, but we started like 20 minutes ago." And I was like, "I don't know where you started because it didn't say on the piece of paper. It just said, come through this entrance." And so she's like, "Okay, come with me." And so then they brought me to this like room where all the other trainees were that I would become very good friends with. And then it just kind of cooked from there. And you have your initial training, basically CIA 101, learning the ropes, very basic stuff, like how to file your hours, you know,
how
your
to time sheet.
Get your badge and all of that stuff. And then they assigned me to a desk to assist. You're going to assist another desk officer. So pick a country. And that's the one that needed help. Mm-hmm. So they'll give a trainee to the people who want it. Because sometimes trainees can get in the way because you got to teach him the whole time. But they assigned me to a desk. And thankfully, I had this guy who was an ex-Marine, kind of took me under his wing and kind of showed me the ropes.
What about the security clearance process?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
So for that security clearance, I'm sure it's all digitized now. Mm-hmm. It was all hard copy back then.
Mm-hmm.
They sent a packet of forms to my house in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a standing deal with my parents that they could and should open all of my mail. And that way, if I needed something in Bloomington, Indiana, they could alert me to it. Like, you got a bill, it's due. So they opened that and didn't tell me about it. And I came home one weekend and I was talking about how I was applying for the CIA because, again, now I know, if I could take it back, I wouldn't have told anybody anything except for my brother, because you're mandated to tell one person in case you're killed so someone can get your benefits. Generally, that's your spouse. So my parents got my packet and I was telling my dad and I was so happy about it. And he was like, "I don't understand why you would want to do a job like that." So I said, "Well, I mean, it sounds really cool." And he starts to basically, and by the way, I know my mom and dad are listening to this.
And by the way, I've met them. They're great people.
So this is on you, Dad. Sorry.
Yeah.
But he started to probably inadvertently let on that he knew way too much.
Ah.
Because he was like, "Well, it's like 80% of the time you're overseas. How does he know that?" Because this is the first I'm telling him. Yeah. So then he said something like, "Well, and I don't know, McLean, Virginia, I don't know that that's like, I mean, you're living in Denver. It's really not, or I'm sorry, I was in Bloomington, but you're going to move to Denver.
Yeah.
Like, it's really nice. Why would you want to live in Virginia?" And so I was like, wait. Where's my mail? Did I get something?" And then he was like, "Yeah, they sent you something." And I was like, "So give it to me." And he's like, "Okay." And he was hesitant. So he gave it to me and it was all the security forms. And they ask a lot of personal questions. And with that SF-86, they want to know everywhere you've ever lived. Okay. And they want to know all of your neighbors' names. Mm. They want to know all of your roommates' names.
Wow.
They want to know your school principal's name. They want to know, foreign contacts.
You remembered all that stuff?
Well, yeah, because at that point, keep in mind, I'm 22 years old.
It just
happened.
Right.
I just graduated high school 4 years ago. Right. So it was pretty easy. But yeah, my dad was like, "I just really don't think you should fill these forms out."
Wow.
And one of them too, for the security clearance, there were like two essays as well that were attached. And I'm looking at it and my dad had had this form for a month and you had 30 days to fill it out. And this was like day 27.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it also needs to be mailed back to them. So I was like, "I have to leave right now." and go back to school and fill all this stuff out tonight to mail it tomorrow morning to get to Washington, D.C. in time. So I left and I probably got to a computer lab around 6 p.m. and got done around like 6 a.m. Because you know this, yeah, as an author, I'm cold hard writing a 5 to 7 page essay from scratch, and it's got to be good. Good enough for the CIA.
Right. And I had a month to do this.
Yeah. And they gave me a month, and now I have 12
crank
hours,
it out.
Two of them, about something of their choice. And it was something very political and like national security based. So I had to do all this research on, because I didn't have a background in it. So yeah, I got it out, thank God. So I'm glad you brought that up. But there again, like, I don't want to say it was on a whim, but because that was very premeditated and I was already in the process at that point, but every single part of me getting into the CIA was like rushed or kind of nothing I could have prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, and I had never thought about that, they probably did want it that way.
Sure.
They probably did set me up. I have never thought about that, so thank you. But they probably did like putting your feet to the fire.
Sure.
To see that you could do it. And I don't know when my dad got that. Maybe he had only got it 5 days prior. Mm-hmm. They said you have a month, but really you got 3 days, you know?
Yeah.
And I had 12 hours. But guess what? It, if anything, prepared me for what would come, because that was day to day for the next 7 years.
And then they went around and interviewed like all your friends and your kindergarten teacher and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Did you get calls from people?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And so I had prepared. So I did not know they were actually going to follow through physically until they went to my first friend's house who worked on a dairy farm. So they went to his house and a woman pulled up in a big black SUV, just like you would think in the movies, in a suit. And she flashed a badge. My buddy's like, oh no, like, what did he do? And she's like, well, he applied for a top secret security clearance. What? Because in Bryant, Indiana, they don't know what that's all about.
Like, sure.
For why.
Sure. Like, what the hell?
And, and the thought of working for the CIA is non-existent.
Yeah.
And it was for me too.
Yeah.
That's why when I say these things, and if you're a listener, is going, wow, he's just a catch-as-catch-can kind of frat bro. No, it's because when you come from trailer parks like I did, this is not on your horizon. For all of the guys I went through the system with who went to Princeton and Yale, it's 100% on the horizon.
Yeah, they've been, their professors told them
about
it.
It's always been told, you can work at the CIA or the State Department or the NSA. You're the brilliant minds.
Right.
For me, it was, you might be able to get into college.
And then who knows after that?
There's always community college, you know?
Right.
You could work at the car dealership if you want.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
You know,
make
learn
a good
trade,
living.
Be electrician.
Right.
You know? So, it never was on my horizon. And so please keep that in mind if you're listening. Like, it wasn't that I wasn't taking it seriously or I was being a bro. It's just, we don't think that way. It'd be like the equivalent of you telling me you could have been in the NBA if you applied yourself, Doug.
Right.
Really? I could have, because like I'm 5'11".
Right.
So I never would have thought you say, no, for real, you could have. Wow. Kind of wish I would have played my cards differently. But after that happened, he called me and he was creeped out, rightfully so. And so I was like, oh, damn. I forget, because again, this is not digital. It's all handwritten and I didn't photocopy any of it. I'm like, oh my God, who else did I put on there? And so then I went and I called who I could remember that I put on there and I warned them.
Right.
And I lied and I said, hey, I work for this company called DHL and they put packages on planes. I sometimes get to go on these planes and course, because 9/11, if you're going to be going on planes unsupervised, you need to have a top secret security clearance. So that's what I'm applying for. And everyone bought that hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
And I made it up just out of ether. And so from that point forward, you know, everyone was like, oh yeah, is this because he goes on planes? Yeah. Yeah. Cause he, cause he's going to go on planes.
Right.
Whatever you got to tell yourself. You
right,
know?
Right.
So, but yeah, from that point forward, they interviewed everyone but my parents, which I found, and they did not interview my brother either. I don't know why that is. But they did not interview them, but I had also, and this is how it was back then, they have a section for people you don't want us to talk to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so I had put like five people on there because they're loudmouths. Up, they talked to all five of them. Probably first. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, wow, that was a real bait and switch.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, now, okay, sweet.
Yeah.
But
that is so
funny. They talked to all five. And so, but anyway, yeah, that's the security process. And I'm glad you brought that up because before I got that conditional offer, you do have to have been cleared hot for a top secret clearance or else they're wasting their time.
Sure.
And you have to have passed the polygraphs and the psych tests and all of that before they offer that.
Right.
But yeah, the security thing comes before even the polygraph or your psych evaluations because they got to make sure you haven't broken the law and have some felonies out there.
Right.
So once they clear that, okay, he could get a TS clearance. Now let's keep pushing him through the system. So, but it takes a long time, especially if you live in a rural area. And, you know, I had some friends who lived in New York, Manhattan. And even they were like, yeah, it was almost a year.
Yeah.
You know, and mine's double that because it's rural. But you're like, well, Jesus, Manhattan still took that long?
Wow.
Yeah, because I have family in Sarasota and they had to go visit them. You know, and I went to high school in New Jersey and they had to go there.
So they do.
They still have a lot of legwork.
They do all that legwork.
Yeah. For people who were going into the career path that I was going into, which is clandestine services, you know, you're going to be either a case officer or a case management officer. One of those two back then. Now I think there's three or four that go through it. But if you were basically slotting to go to the farm, they took it extreme, which they should.
Of course.
Because otherwise you're going to have a Russian, you know, coming in and like somebody else who. So yeah, these are precursors to basically washing out anyone who's even remotely suspect.
As Doug explains, being accepted to the CIA is a process that required him to lie to his family, friends, and colleagues. While obtaining his security clearance, in addition to the countless tests and interviews Doug underwent personally, interviews of his family and friends were also conducted, all under false pretenses. Doug told friends and family that he had filed for a security clearance in order to ride as an unticketed passenger on DHL flights. That excuse seemed to work, but when it came to his employer, DHL, he had to come up with something else. So he told his boss that he had written an article for the magazine The Economist on the subject of national security, and the magazine was doing a quick check on his background. It sounded far-fetched, but Doug's lie ended up working better than he could have ever imagined. The story of him writing an article for The Economist was written up in the DHL company newsletter, and he was named District Salesman of the Year.
So the farm is a big lobbying program for the trainees, okay? And it's hyper-competitive. And you might imagine that it would be considering the people that they hire.
Yeah.
I mean, you're hiring really very well-accomplished and hyper-intelligent individuals.
And type A individuals.
Generally speaking, yes.
Having worked with several.
Yeah.
You're not shy retiring types.
No. So I'll just go right out and stereotype. I was very rare. Okay. I wasn't the typical type of recruit or the type of typical officer. The typical officer is someone you might imagine from an Ivy League school or a very great university who got top grades, speaks a couple languages, has traveled extensively, if not lived overseas. Mm-hmm. Probably speaking, has very successful parents, is from some money, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and upper middle class, one might say, or upper class.
Yeah.
Some would say. And so very few come from like lower middle class.
Right.
Or, you know, some state school where, you know, I took it seriously, but not that seriously, you know, like academics were second compared to having fun. And that's just what it is. So it didn't make sense to me at all the first year I was there. And it was hard for me to make friends. And so most of my friends were on the outside that I met at bars in Georgetown, D.C. I just had a hard time relating with my contemporaries. And they also kind of shied away from me because even when I would meet them at a happy hour on a Friday at a TGI Fridays, you know, we'd all just kind of be standing around and they really didn't have, and I still have nothing but respect for all of them. So if you're listening, know that I, you know, I wish you all the best. But they didn't really have anything that we could talk about outside of work. Mm-hmm. And you're not supposed to talk about work at TGI Fridays. So it kind of was like staring at each other a little bit. Very, very superficial and forced and just kind of, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And so I'd be like, all right, who wants to do shots? You know? And they'd be like, oh, shots. Yeah. Like, no. And so then I'd be like, all right, who wants to go into DC and party in DuPont Circle? No one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was really interesting starting because they all kind of were on the same level intellectually, too. And they had all read a lot of the same books.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all, you know, knew who the same big shot politicians were and who famous people of antiquity were. I was new enough to be dangerous. I'm not trying to make it sound like I was stupid and just drunk all the time. After the first year or so, I was pretty well liked amongst my colleagues because I was so different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I was like the class clown, but I was definitely the guy that everyone went to when they wanted their voice heard. They didn't like the way something in the program was going. They wanted to address it with management. Ask Doug, you know, he'll march his ass down there right now and bitch. And I would. So
you were saying that the competition to go to the farm became a big, big issue among the recruits.
Absolutely. It was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And
because everybody wanted to get there.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to sit at a fucking desk. I'm sorry.
Especially if you went through all this trouble.
Like I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
And so you keep in mind at that point, I'm already sitting at a desk for a year, year and a half. Like this, I hate this, you know, like I get it. And I now have perspective and I know why they made me do it because they want you to read everything that's happening so that you know how to produce that. Mm-hmm. You know how to write. You know, you're an author. They always say in order to write well, you have to read a lot. But with trying to get down there to the farm, I say down there, right? You go down to the farm. That's how you say it. It was highly competitive. And in that, there's going to be like a group of senior officers who each time there's going to be a new running of the farm, they'll say. That's how they describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a running of buds for Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
You know, a new buds running, a new buds class, a new farm class. And so a group of senior officers will get together and they'll look at who the candidates are, like who's in the running.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they'll say, who's in the running. And a lot of it, honestly, is just done from paper because what they're going to do is they're going to look at who you are and like what your credentials were beforehand, what languages you speak, and then what rotations, what desks you've worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the easiest thing that they're going to be able to do, and probably the most substantive thing, is they're going to type in your name into the computer, your pseudonym.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so mine was Steve Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have typed Steve Sanchez into the computer, and it's going to pop up with everything I've ever written for the CIA.
Mm.
They're going to look at my numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're going to look at the subject lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to read a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to type in Steve Sanchez, and they're going to see 512 cables over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But then they might type in Joe Smith with 103 cables.
Mm-hmm.
And right then and there, they're going to make the decision that Joe Smith's not ready.
Yeah.
And that I am.
Yeah.
And I had a hell of a lot of cables.
Yeah.
Because I was typing my ass off while I was there.
Yeah.
And so that's a big, big thing to show that you as a rookie, as, you know, a trainee, we're working.
Yeah.
We're putting in the
engaged.
Effort. Yeah. Yeah. We're putting in the effort.
And right.
So that's at least half of it, if not more than half of it. But there's also a lot of lobbying that can go on too, where the trainees will try to get assigned to specific desks that hold more weight, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So look, if you don't know that the CIA is active in China and Russia, you're stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, I'm not revealing shit by saying that. Okay.
Right.
So if you don't already know that.
And they're two of the biggest countries on the planet.
And you want to come at me and think I revealed something, you are dumb. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. The CIA is concerned with Russia and China. Okay. Just accept that now as a reality. Thank you. But if you thought, well, I want accelerated, I want to get down there quicker, well, then, yeah, you want to be put on the Russia desk. You want to be put on the China desk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You want to be where the action's at.
And those desks have a lot of pull politically.
100%.
Right.
And your boss is going to be one of the heaviest hitters in the agency.
Right.
And so if they like you, they can pick up the phone and call somebody on that board that's voting you in and go, yeah, I don't care. Do me this favor. You know,
Hazme
a catorce, do this for me. Like,
right.
I want you to do this. And they would, because I'll be your boss and your next tour, you know, making the decision. So, everybody lobbied to get those really good ones. And for me, I just really didn't care because I hated desk work and I was just going through motions. So assign me three of them, assign me four of them. I'll get down there. You know, but I didn't want to work like Moscow or Beijing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do it in real life either. So why the hell would I want to work their desk too?
Yeah.
You know, so like I didn't know where I wanted to go. I was pretty set that I wanted to go to a war zone. And so also my mindset was, it doesn't matter what I do now. You can put me on here. I'm just going to throw out a country that's... careful so that nobody gets France.
Okay. Yeah,
like, France or the Germany desk there so that nobody can get pissed that I revealed something. Put me on that desk. I don't care. Put me on Canada desk. Put me on Greenland's desk.
Right.
I don't care. Like, I'm just checking boxes. I'll do the work and I'll do everything you ask me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do it on time every time. But no, I don't want all that responsibility of China and all that. So what happened, and I think I mentioned this in Left of Boom. In fact, I know I do. I was working a Middle Eastern country's desk, and my boss came in one day who was in charge of that region of like four or five countries okay, in the Middle East. And he came in and his hair's all on fire and it's 8:30 in the morning. And he's like, the chief of the most important country in the Middle East. You can probably figure out which one that is. He's coming in right now. Okay. And this is unannounced. I didn't know he was coming back, and he's coming in to our vault. Does everyone know who he is and what he looks like? Because this is the equivalent of that guy whose hair's on fire to put it in military terms for people to maybe comprehend it a little more, he would have been the rank of like a major or maybe a lieutenant colonel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Upper mid career.
Mm-hmm.
This guy coming in is a 3-star general, if not 4-star general. So while he's coming in from the field, he's one of the top 5 most important people in the entire agency. Like, this guy can walk in the director's office and probably tell the director what to do, because the director doesn't know the agency like this guy who's been there 37 years. You see, so respect is going to come his way. And so he's coming in, and I knew who the guy was. And so I'm looking at, you have a queue. You know, this State Department has these two, like a cable queue.
Mm-hmm.
So like your work, documents you need to be working on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have 4 or 5 of them. And I see one of them is important and relevant to this guy's country. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty easy document to write. It's basically like, what would you say? Like a personnel kind of checklist.
Okay.
A who's who in the zoo.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So like case officer John Smith is working these cases, and this is his most important asset, and this is who that guy is. Just a synopsis. And I saw it there, and I was like, I bet that the chief would probably like to have that, you know? So I just start doing that. And he doesn't roll in till like 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in and he just walks right into my boss's office and shuts the door. And he's in there like an hour or two. And so then I'm still working, just doing my thing. And then he comes out of there and he comes into the bullpen and he's saying hi to everyone. And he's a cool dude. Still like this guy. He was always cool. And he's like, so who has these offices? Because there's like 3 offices along the wall. And somebody said, oh, that's that person does this, that person does this, and that person does this. And he goes, oh, okay, got it. So he just walks into the first office and he goes, hey, I need you to relocate and go sit in the bullpen with the others. I'm going to take this office. And that person, I don't know. I'm sure they knew who this guy was.
Yeah.
But certainly didn't think that he would do that. But again, like, yes, a 3-star general is going to tell a major to get the fuck up.
Right. And I need your office.
I need your office.
Yeah,
like, you move. I'm not sitting in a bullpen with the 24-year-old.
I can't. I'm going to talk things I don't want you to hear.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. He would have wanted a secure phone, which that office would have had. And so this person was just like, okay, I guess let me log out. Yeah, okay, do that. Take your time. And then they just got up and like sat next to me. And I'm like, this is my boss, you know, sitting next to me now. Right. But he just goes in there. And then about half hour later, we have like an internal messaging system, you know, like AOL, Instant Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
I get a message from my boss, the one he initially talked to. And he says, hey, I see you have that cable open about the personnel. I need that done by the end of the day.
I didn't
have that done by the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that was at like 1 o'clock. And then it hits like 1:30 and he goes, actually need it in an hour.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like really cranking on it, super focused. And then like 10 minutes later, I have a hand on my shoulder. He's like, I need it now. And I'm like, oh, ha, now?
Yeah.
Print it.
Yeah.
Print what you got. Oh my God. Okay. And so then like, I'm still, cause you know, you still try to.
Right, right.
He comes back and he's like, Sanchez, I fucking said print it now. I'm like, woo.
Yeah, this guy's hot.
Okay. He's getting yelled at by the big timer. So I print it. And I bring it to him. He's like, all right. 5 minutes later, I see big time chief get up from his office and walk into there. And I'm like, and shut the door. And I'm like,
And so, something's going on.
Yeah. And so then it's like probably 4 o'clock and they're still in there. And I'm like, oh man, like, oh geez, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm still actually completing the cable,
yeah,
like filling out more as I'm sitting there. And then the big chief comes in and he goes, "What's everybody up to this weekend?" And we're like terrified of this. You know, like, this guy's so intimidating. And then he's like, "What's everybody up to this weekend?" We're like, "Stuff."
Yeah.
He's like, "All right, cool." And then he just writes on like a three by five cards are big in the CIA. Most people keep them in their breast pocket.
Okay.
To write something to hand to somebody.
Right.
You know, like, that's just what we do.
Right.
Right. And so he writes his home address on there. He's like, "My 55th birthday party, having a big blowout. Feel free to bring your significant others. Bring a dish if you like. Starts at noon." And we're just like, "What?" And I like look at the address and I don't want to give away who this person is. I don't know if he's still there or not.
Yeah.
But I'm like, okay, so he lives like in the country, you know, of Virginia.
Yeah.
Probably has a palatial estate. And he's just like, "So feel free to bring others, but make sure that they work here so that everyone's comfortable. But starts at noon and see y'all there."
Yeah.
So we're just like, "Yeah, okay."
"Yes, sir."
"Yeah, all right." And so then he leaves. And then 10 minutes later, my boss comes in and he looks like he's just boxed Mike Tyson. And he's like, "Oh, man." And everybody knows, like, "Oh, geez." And he's like, "Sanchez, come in my office." "Okay, shut the door. Have a seat." And he's like, "Sanchez, you really saved the day."
Like other new CIA recruits, Doug was first given a desk job at Langley headquarters and spent every hour of every day figuring how he could get to the farm where he'd finally be trained to become a CIA operative. He had heard that the process could take years. His current job entailed following the cable traffic back and forth between officers in a specific country in the Middle East and CIA headquarters and writing reports. When the hot-headed chief of station Doug mentioned walked into the office of the country desk where he worked, he demanded a report on a specific terrorist group that Doug's boss couldn't produce. Doug had already been quietly working on the report and forwarded it to his boss, thereby saving his boss's ass. A few months later, Doug's boss became the officer who recommended recruits for the farm. Doug was pushed to the top of the list. He was scheduled to report to the training facility in the woods in 2 weeks. He spent that time selling his car, getting rid of his furniture, and giving his TV and stereo equipment to friends. Anything he couldn't sell, he threw over his balcony into a dumpster below. Then came the saddest part, which was breaking up with the girlfriend he loved. He told her that the company he was working for was transferring him to another city and then sending him overseas. Lying to her, he said, made him feel like the worst human being on earth.
Look, it's nothing like The Recruit, which is one of my favorite movies, Al Pacino, Colin Farrell. It's nothing like that. And people, SEALs will tell you this too. Feel free to ask them because I know you have them on the show. Buds is nothing like what you see in the movies. They don't, you don't even pick up a weapon in Buds. They don't teach you how to fire guns in Buds. That comes after.
You got to get through here.
You need to pass this first.
The physical stuff.
Yeah. You need to prove yourself. You're not going to do a halo jump until you pass this first.
Right.
We're going to put you in the ocean and, you know, put a log on you and you're just going to sit there all night. That's what this is about.
Right.
Resiliency. And so farm, kind of the same thing. You're not getting taught tradecraft per se. You're not like, you know, learning high speed driving or the motorcycle course or weapons or demolitions. None of that until you prove that you can pass the farm first. And the majority of the farm is personal interaction with humans because you're conducting human intelligence, espionage, 101. So it's a lot of role playing, okay? And for me, a lot of that I kind of was used to because we did that in sales.
Seriously, right,
sure. Sales seminars, you know, it'd be like, sell me your product. Get me to switch from FedEx to DHL. Go. Here's why you need to switch.
Right.
You know, and like being able to negotiate and manipulate and all of that. So this is just on a much higher, different scale, but it was the same thing.
But you know, some of the basic moves already.
Yeah, it would be like, okay, this guy is going to be a Russian. Okay. You want to know about the SVR and what their operations are against the United States Embassy. Go. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah.
Get that person to like you. Yeah. You know, build rapport. Right. And so that's what a lot of it is. And then getting that person to data dump on you and then you writing it up, which is 75%. It's a lot of writing. Because that's what the field is. Yeah. It's a lot of writing. Because the motto is, if you don't write it, it didn't happen. Because you were the only one there.
Right.
And whatever you do write is what happened.
Right.
So you have a lot of power.
So you better get it down on paper the right way.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, 9 times out of 10, this is in a foreign language.
Yeah.
And you're talking about big words, espionage words. You know, you're talking about like military equipment. So you need to know how to say Chinook in Russian. You know, like, and when
you don't want to get the wrong helicopter,
you need it precise.
Yeah.
So just getting the reps in for that, practicing that, that is Farm 101. And I'm not giving anything away. I mean, this shit is all online and I'm not just confirming it. Lots of people have talked about this. I'm not giving you specific scenarios. All I'm saying is that you're going to practice human intelligence, okay? You're going to talk to other humans.
That's what your job's going to be.
And then you're going to prove that you can be accurate because that person that was role-playing against you is going to be the one reading your report, okay? So, like, they know what they said.
I didn't say that.
Yeah. They know what they said to you, and so they're going to be reading back what you're saying they said. So if you get it wrong, you're extra double-effed because they know what they said. And so, but you know, that helps too, because then they'll review it with you and say, well, you know, I didn't say it like that. And when you write it like that, it makes it sound like I have an axe to grind and I don't, I want money. I don't hate that person I ratted out. And this is all role playing, like I don't hate, but it's good for you to know. So when you get into the real world, because if I portray you as somebody with an axe to grind, my boss might read that and go, oh, they have an axe to grind? Well, they'll go above and beyond then. Give them this thumb drive next time. Get them to steal even more. But if I report it more accurately and go, he actually likes the SVR. He actually likes this guy. He's just in debt and he needs my money. And he doesn't like tattletaling on this guy.
Right, but he's screwed financially. He's
financially screwed. He needs my money. That's a totally different way I read that now.
Sure.
Because this way you're a scumbag. This way you're just in debt and I can do a lot more with you as a scumbag, but also within debt, I can do a lot with you because I know that financially you need me. Scumbag, I got to keep you on the hook psychologically. So I got to make sure I'm feeding that monetarily. I just got to, you know,
open the pocket, open exactly. Write some checks.
And so it's easier, but I also can kind of figure out my buoys to my left and my right of what I can get you to do for me. And again, that's just that. It's not a normal, nor should it be a normal way of thinking as a civilian, but they're teaching you to think that way of judging people. How can I use this person and what would they do, you know, for a Klondike bar?
Right.
How far would they go? Who would they sell out? I mean, would they sell out their spouse? Really? What type of person is that? That's an interesting person. Right. Wow. Yeah. What wouldn't they do? So then you just, you know, making those calculations because you're the only one in charge. You're the only one.
And they're helping you to identify these different types of people as well. Profile
and training. Yeah. It's helping you to like, so that person that you played against, they're going to be like, well, why do you think I told you that? you know, like, did you consider that maybe it's this?
You didn't go further.
Yeah. Like, when I told you my wife's sick, you didn't ask me any further questions about, oh, like, is there anything I can do? Because then I would have told you she's terminally ill. So now you know she's going to die. So now you know that's going to screw things up for us. Because when she dies, I might fly off the handle. So you need to be preparing for that, for this guy, when that inevitably happens, which you know is going to happen, but you never asked. Again, you might miss those massive gateways. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have even said like, oh, yeah, my daughter's such a screw up. Oh, is everything okay? If I just gloss over and go, that's too bad. But the SVR, now your kernel and, ooh, I need to back up. Let's just stop for a moment. I'm your psychiatrist now. Well, is everything all right with your daughter? Oh, she just can't be trusted. Really? Well, why do you say that? Well, because she did this. Oh, really? Wait, so she also works for the GRU? Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
She works in computers, you know, and then you just learned something that
this could be really key.
Yeah, but if you don't ask, you just gloss right over it. Sometimes you get horse blinders on because I do know what you do know. I don't know what I don't
know.
What
you're not telling me.
Yeah. But I do know what you have access to. But there might be way more that I don't know about. Mm-hmm. If I just laser focus on that one document, I know that you can get me without thinking about the other things and letting you speak, then I may have missed a ton of stuff.
More important.
More important than what I knew you had access.
Right.
Oh, yeah, by the way, I mean, I have the key to the safe. Huh. Okay. Forget that document. Let's talk about the safe.
Right.
So.
And all the time you're being graded. So there's a constant like evaluation process.
Yeah. It's not like after every time you're given an A, B, a C or a D, it's an ongoing fluid process. So like if you were a trainee and I was an instructor and, however many times I meet with you, if on the third time, I think there's a problem, I'll probably pull you aside. Even though I need to meet you 5-6 more times, if I think you have a problem, like an attitude problem or some other sort of significant issue that
is blocking your effectiveness.
Yeah, that bothers me when I have to interact with you. Because if I don't like you and I'm predisposed to like you, then the enemy's gonna fucking hate you.
Right.
So, like, I have to like you, because if I don't like you, kid,
I'm not going
to need to change real quick, or you're going home. That is what the number one thing that gets people.
So that a lot of it is just being coming across as a sympathetic, open kind of person.
Yeah, because and a lot of people, and this is not giving too much away, but a lot of the people who get bounced lack empathy. That's a big word. Okay. They can't empathize and sympathize, and they're robotic rocks, and they're just going through, and they're very solipsistic. It's just, so I understand that you work for the SVR. You're a colonel. Is that correct? Excellent. How long have you been a colonel? 23 years. Good. So I understand that you have access to this vault. Do you still have the key? Good. I'm willing to pay you this amount of money. Okay.
Yeah.
You can do it like that.
But it's not going to work.
Or you can be like, hey, I brought you some vodka. Fuck the intelligence. Let's drink, man.
Yeah.
Let's have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about all the good things. Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like to live in Stalingrad or whatever?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's interesting because my dad was in Vietnam and you say you were an advisor in Cambodia for the Russians. That's wild to think that you may have been fighting against my father. Oh, yeah. Dude, that's so crazy. Here, cheers. Let's take a shot. you know, and then just getting that guy's rapport and them liking you. And then it's like, oh man, this has been so fun. Listen, I don't even care if you tell me anything today. I just liked hanging out with you. Let's get together again. Well, don't you want to know about the vault? I mean, if you want to talk about it, we can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I do. Sure.
Let's hit hear me. It. Yeah, yeah.
Hit me with it. Let me pour you another drink. And then it's like, hey, next time, bring a carton of cigarettes too. What kind do you like? Marlboro Red? I'll have it. And you want Beluga vodka? I'll bring a handle next time. Cleared that fifth pretty easily. Ha 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 ha. Man, you're the best, comrade. All yeah, right, yeah. Man. Cheers. Yeah, I'll see you next time. Now he's looking forward to broing out with
right,
me.
Right, right.
And again, if you're a listener and you're going, dude, this guy's so bro, you're wrong. You're wrong. Because I got people who absolutely hated America. Hated America and hated Americans and hated me the first time they met me. And there is no alcohol involved. This is in the Middle East. Yeah. But for me to take the time to get to know you, oh, you like figs? Really? Where does one acquire figs?
What kind of figs do you like?
Yeah. Yeah. Where does one acquire those? Well, the only place you're going to get them is from this one market in downtown Kandahar. Really? Okay. What's the name? Why? You're not going to go there. I'm not going to go there, but I can assure you I send someone to get me as many figs as you can eat. You know?
Yeah.
What's your favorite food?
Yeah.
The Bali Palau? It will be here next time you come here. And I'm going to have a spread of like enough food for 10 people. And you're going to be impressed. And you'll be like, wow. And I'll be like, just kick it. Let's have tea, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's smoke. You know, like right. whatever. Like,
yeah.
And then, you know, the hour is going to hit and you're going to go, hey, I got to pray. Okay, I'll kneel with you. You know, I'm a non-Muslim, so I'm not going to bow my head and touch the ground. And I'm not going to, you know, recite, you know, any Quranic verse, but I will kneel with you out of respect. You know, wow, really? Yeah. What do you think I'm going to do? Just stand and hover over
watch
you?
Watch you? Yeah.
Sure. I'll kneel with you. That's cool.
Yeah, I respect your religion.
Yeah, I understand. You know, and so just things like that where they can see that you're not just plastic and you're not just a hammer trying to pound a nail. You're actually trying to get to know them.
Right.
And, you know, some of the people, as evil as they were, and we talk about this in Left a Boom, one of the guys, my main guy, who helped to disrupt the Wolverine network, I think we call him Mahmoud.
Mm-hmm.
That guy wanted to, like, come to him. He's Taliban commander. Okay.
Yeah.
He's killed lots of people. But he was like, man, I'd love to come to New York. And I'm like, they do not want you there. But, you know, he's like, I'd love to come to New York, man. You know, I've seen it. It's so cool. They think that, too.
Yeah.
Like, that is a Taliban commander who hates Americans.
He watches movies, too.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, you know, Times Square.
Yeah.
You know?
Like,
the world knows what that is.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
Yankees.
Yeah.
You know,
he knows what
that is. And to think that he doesn't, you're wrong. Yes. Does this guy live 6 months out of the year in a cave? Correct. But the other 6 months when he's in Kandahar, they have television and a lot of them have Dish TV. Don't forget that. They get all the Indian channels and they get a lot of the British channels. They see what's going on in America as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, they know a lot more than that we give them credit for. So,
right. They're not stupid.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, anyway, but that's a big part of it. And so that ties all the way back to the farm is, and even what we were talking about at the top of how a lot of the people that were my colleagues were white collar and had no experience with the dregs. Okay. So the farm is their first entree of dealing with unsavory people, even though it's fake. You know, I have this happen from time to time, even here in LA, where I'll tell somebody straight off and somebody with me would be like, no one's ever talked to that person like that before. You could tell, like, they were in shock that you told them to get bent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so for a lot of the colleagues I worked with, when they have an instructor calling them names to their face, you know, and saying like, no, I hope you die. They've never been, even though it's fake, they've never been told, I hope someone kills you. Do you get
and
that?
And if I get a chance myself,
if I get a chance,
I will do it.
I will love to kill you. And I mean it. And then they're like, oh, you know, whereas I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
How's your kebab?
Right.
You know, like, right, sure, right. Sure you will.
Right,
sure
right,
you will.
Right.
But they've never.
Yeah.
So for me, it wasn't shocking at all. And that stuff came pretty easy. But for them, it was altering because even in a fake sense, no one's ever really gotten their face before.
Right. And called them on stuff.
And, and told them, F you. That's what I think. Or I don't want to give you my secrets. You know why? Because I don't like you. And that's an instructor being truthful with you.
Yeah.
They're like letting some bleed in.
Right, going, right.
No, because I don't like you. Because you don't have my trust. Because you're not a good person. Yeah. You just came in and you sat down today and you just expected me to just give you everything for free. Why? I don't like you.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
And so now that person needs to win them over and go, right, what can I do?
Right.
You know, and that's what the instructor wants to hear you say, like,
right,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry I came across like that. What can I, because in the real world, you usually won't get a second chance. If the bad guy goes, if they don't like you, they'll just smoke their cigarette. If they're Taliban, especially, they'll just smoke the cigarette and be like, sure, I'll get that for you. Yeah, that sounds good. Sure. Give me my envelope of money and I'll come back next week and you will never see them again. You will never see them again. Trust me.
Yeah.
You will never see them again. And I am at fault for that. I had many Taliban fighters take a little bit of money and I never saw them again because I didn't get my hooks in them, you know? And what? Guess what? Case officers can have a bad day too sometimes.
Sure.
You're not on point, you know, and you're not focused.
Right.
And you let one slip through the cracks. And yeah, that happens a lot. But even if they're a bad guy or a fellow spy, KGB, they have to like you.
Yeah.
And that's what the farm's trying to train you. Like rapport, rapport, rapport. You're going to be getting humans to steal for you for the amount you make at Walmart in most countries.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're risking their life.
Yeah.
Literally, you're trading in life and death. If they get caught, they get killed. So they have to really trust you and like you.
Trust is important too.
And even if they trust you, if they don't like you, they're not going to take risks for you. Like, I need you to, in the back of your mind, be like, Samurai's going to be really happy if I get this. Samurai's going to be really upset if I don't get this today.
Yeah.
Because I promised him I would. I'm going to be letting Samurai down. That's how I want your brain firing. You're either going to make me happy or you're going to make me sad.
Right.
Money should come secondary to that.
Yeah. So you go through this process and then you pass. Well, is there a evaluation at the end? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, there's several reviews where all of the guys are going to get together, guys and gals, the instructors, and they're going to talk about you. And it's the same as when I was saying when you were a trainee. You know, they're going to talk about you and assess you. And if somebody's got a bone to pick with you, they're going to raise it and say, I don't think this guy has empathy. Or, you know, one time this guy said something really off color to me and I don't think we can course correct that.
Oh, wow.
You know, like that doesn't happen in a vacuum. Saying something blatantly sexist like that or something, like they should know.
So
better.
They're looking for red flags.
Yeah, absolutely. But some of them are irreparable and you can't come back from, because the other instructors making the call didn't know that that happened, and you, and they like you, and then you come in and say he made some really offensive joke and I'm a terrorist. The mindset of this person to think that that's the move,
right?
To me, playing, you know, a devout Muslim to make a joke about Islam, they just don't get it. Like, that's unforgivable, you
right
know? And then everyone's gonna go, he said what? Oh, that he's just dumb.
So people are getting drummed out all the time.
Yeah. And that can happen any day of the week. that can happen. And some people self-select. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that can happen at any time.
So you went in with a class of people, like mm-hmm. like 20, 30 people, whatever mm-hmm. the number is. What percentage of them graduated?
Well, it's a higher number than that. Again, Wikipedia, okay. if you want to know. But I don't know the exact percentages, but it's probably something equivalent to like buds. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm totally guessing here, but I would say between self-select and bounced, probably a third get bounced or mm-hmm. self-select. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. maybe even higher than that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, that just like buds, that bell can be rang any day or night.
So people just say
anytime,
this isn't for me.
Yeah. All the time. I mean, I thought about it many times.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like this. And if this is what the job's going to be, I don't like it. I don't like typing until 3 a.m. every night. And if I'm going to be at some embassy typing until 3 a.m. every fucking night, I don't want that job.
Mm-hmm.
This is not fun. It's not Jason Bourne exciting. So yeah. I don't want to do that. But then, you know, I would meet with different instructors and they would go, yeah, but you said you wanted to go to Afghanistan. Okay, there ain't shit like that. Okay?
Right.
You know,
right.
And then they'd tell me what their careers are like. And I'd be like, well, that's what I want to do. They're like, get this Willy Wonka ticket, graduate the farm. Then you can talk about getting to a war zone and being a war zone case officer. But not until you graduate.
Yeah.
And you're going to graduate the same courses that the guy going to Moscow is taking. So if we need you in Moscow, you're going. But you need to pass what he passes. Then go Khoda Hafez.
Yeah.
You know, we'll send you to Kabul, to Kandahar, to Shken, to you're going. We'll get you out there. But pass this first. So that kept me in the fold.
Once he became a bona fide CIA officer, Doug refused to settle for an embassy assignment and asked to be sent to a war zone to a base at the tip of the spear. He got his wish. After learning the Pashtun language, he was sent to a top secret base on the Afghan-Pakistani border. There he developed a network of spies and sources that uncovered the syndicate run out of Pakistan that was supplying improvised explosive devices, IEDs, used by the Taliban to kill and maim U.S. and coalition soldiers. He also ran the most important U.S. asset with close ties to Al-Qaeda. After Afghanistan, Doug was assigned to the newly formed Syrian Task Force. His job was to coordinate with anti-Assad forces in Syria. Angered and frustrated by CIA politics and red tape, he resigned from the CIA in 2013, but not after a distinguished and daring career that reads like a real-life spy thriller, which is exactly what the book he and I wrote together, Left the Boom, is. We thank Doug for his candor, extreme bravery, and service to our country. It's with great appreciation that we call him today's hero behind the headlines. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Ralph Pizzullo. Our producers are myself, Frank Hobbs, and Apex Media. If you haven't already, please download, rate, review, and subscribe. And check out some of our past episodes, such as an unbelievable human trafficking survival story. And don't forget to tune into the next episode of Heroes Behind Headlines.